welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight's show, dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, and science, and a host of other ideas and thoughts. I thought tonight's show would be on demystifying living a virtuous life. Reason I say just demystifying is because most people, when they hear the word virtue, and it applied in some way about being a more spiritual person, they don't know how to put that together. And when they go to books and other places, it's usually not as clear as it could be. So tonight we're going to make it clear, really clear. Does that mean it's all going to be right? I hope so. But if not, you can always call in and or send me a nasty email or something if you want. But at any rate, if you're on the phone, and hopefully you won't send me a nasty one, but I'm saying if you don't like what I'm going to say, well, you can disagree with me. You can call in if you would like, and of course the numbers are on screen, but if you're listening in, you may not have that number. And of course you can be on the phone right now. So you can reach us in the U.S. at 877-876-5227. And for those of you who would prefer to be on the phone but don't know what that number is, but are listening on a computer somewhere, that number is 712-432-0075. A lot of different numbers to remember, but hopefully we've got it. Last week, we had a goof up right at the end of the show. I was looking at the clock, but unfortunately, the microphone cord and several other angles were obscuring the middle number of the clock, and I thought it was saying 653, excuse me, and it was actually saying 643. I couldn't see it. And I actually signed off for a few seconds 10 minutes early. However, to the rescue, our engineer, Seth, said, hey, you're 10 minutes early. So within less than 30 seconds, I got back on. I just hope that people didn't just hang up and say, oh, wow, that guy shorted us by 10 minutes. And if that happened, I'm sorry for those of you who it may have happened to. Most people, I think, based upon what we could tell, actually hadn't broken the connection yet. They were probably saying, huh, what? And the music was still playing. So suddenly I rushed back in and said, no, 10 more minutes. And so, yeah, we got 10 more minutes. I sort of rushed through that because I put in a lot more than maybe I should have at the very end of the show, but I wanted to get as much in there as I could. All right, so that explained last week, in case some of you didn't know that. But you can go back and listen to the archives if you missed that last 10 minutes, which is really interesting. Okay, demystifying living a virtuous life. First of all, let's start off by what I mean by all this. What is virtuous? Virtue, in a scientific sense, using metaphysics now, is light in form. What is light? Light is the thought of our Creator. So light in form is light that is captured in some way within the form, which is energy. So it's enlightened energy, because form is really made out of some sort of energy. So light in form is captured thought within the energy of our Creator. If it's represented that way, then that's a wonderful and a good thing. Another way to describe it is also its spirit that has affected form, because spirit is made out of God's thought as well. So we could, it's all kind of like the same thing. It's just different ways of describing it. And so that's what I mean by virtuous life, that the life a person pursues is attempting to enlighten, that's the thought of God, in the form that they live within, and also they have anything to do with in changing or affecting around them. That's what a person who is living a virtuous life is trying to do. And it makes a lot of sense if you think about it. It's very simplistic. It isn't as complicated as what a lot of people think. Well, virtue, what does that mean? Yeah, if you try to describe it in some way other than what I just did, it can get into very iffy areas. Because then it seems very relativistic. Well, is this virtuous or is that virtuous? And which one is more virtuous? But if you see it in the way that I described it, then at least we have a basic understanding. Now, are there different levels to virtue? Absolutely. As a matter of fact, if we think about it, the amount of light that is in form changes the nature of the virtue. So some forms that are enlightened to a certain level are at a certain level of virtue, where others may be much less or much more. Another thing I want to bring up is that when I'm talking about people creating a life that is virtuous for themselves, that's also relative to their ability to be responsive in a virtuous way. And many people have different levels of that. So, consequently, when referring to someone being virtuous or not, I think it's important to realize that there is a relative value to what that means. People who are virtuous but have a limited ability to respond may be virtuous at a much absolute lower level in terms of creating God's thought and form. In other words, in creating spirit and spiritual life for themselves, than someone who is much more capable of being responsive and therefore responsible. And so these things are really where our societal norms and a lot of complicated and argumentative type of issues come up. And hopefully we can demystify some of this tonight so that it makes a lot more sense. So this is a big, big part of demystifying, is to understand that different people have different abilities at creating virtue. And the level that we would like to get to is the level that we can respond at any given time. Which, by the way, this is another interesting wrinkle. Are you ready for this? Every time someone creates virtue in their life, their ability to do so the next time goes up a little bit or some amount, we'll say. And so consequently, this is a real moving target. And that changes the whole framework under which we're going to be trying to demystify this as well, because that means that there is a dynamic issue that is taking place in living a virtuous life. People aren't the same from literally 1 minute to the next, and certainly from 1 day, 1 week, 1 month to the next. This is a changeable situation. Now, that may surprise some of us, some of you, because most people prefer to think of virtue as an absolute. As a matter of fact, if we sort of digress and go to talking about virtue in terms of the way some religions refer to it, they usually do the opposite from what I'm describing. They don't describe virtue specifically as something of a personal, individual nature that is part of how a person becomes more part of their co-creator, part of their connection with God, but rather as some kind of reaching some kind of tenet that is prescribed by certain religious values and views. When you get to that point that you do that, unfortunately, you put people in boxes, you reduce the ability for people to understand what it means to live virtuously, and it makes the whole thing very, very difficult to actually achieve, because you're either going to be most of the time under or over wherever these predications are that a specific religion may be seeking. So here is the issues for tonight. If we're going to really understand what I'm going to present to you, which, again, I certainly am open to hearing others' viewpoints about this, especially people who may be on the opposite side of what I just said and say, well, there's an absolute virtue of this or that or whatever. Well, then we at least can look at what the advantage is to having an individual standard. And I think I'll talk about that right now. Individuality in promoting virtue and in assessing virtue leads to freedom of thought, open-mindedness, and a tolerance and acceptance of most other people. This is a very, very good thing, and it allows growth, unended growth, for people in those who seek to live a virtuous life. This is a tremendous advantage, even if it produces for some people a level of discomfort, because the standards seem to change from one person's valuation of virtue versus another, and also in determining whether someone is reaching some level of virtue in their creations. But it's worth the ambiguity and the difficulties in understanding to provide the freedom and open-mindedness and growth that is so much more apparent and relevant in having a relative scale. Now, the argument for those who want to have absolute measure is the belief that God gave rules, sort of like to Moses, the lawgiver. And in so doing, if we live by these standards or rules, we then can determine that we are living a virtuous life. The problem with those rules is they have a basic, I'll call it antithesis, which means an opposite idea from what virtue really is. Virtue is something that is created by someone or something. It is not a established source that drops it on top of someone or creates it outside of that individual doing it that makes it so. Even though it appears that way, if you look at some of the religions in our world. So in other words, someone might say, well, if I follow my religion, if I do all these things, then I'm leading a virtuous life. But then that assumes that somehow God is rewarding those people who do that and punishing those who aren't. The treachery of that system of thought is so apparent today. You can see if a person believes that God is dictating the right methods of doing any particular activity, which is presented to them through their religion or some teaching, then ultimately, if that's the good part, then the bad guys are the ones who aren't following those. And then you can do bad things to the bad guys is the next great leap in total absurdity in thought. And we end up with terrible results in our world. So you can see why I am trying to present a different position than the traditional one that some people may have about this subject. Hopefully, most of our listeners are at least somewhat in agreement with what I'm saying, because then what I'm also explaining about the opposite side will clarify why we have problems and how we might be able to deal with some of those problems, which I will cover later in the show. Hopefully we'll get there. So you can see that this relative relative issue of virtue is, and the creative side of it, is critical to having a free and open-minded world, one that truly represents the very first part of God's mind, which is freedom. Freedom to think, freedom to create, freedom to be. And you might say, well, then how did it happen? What the heck went wrong with all of these religions? Because almost every religion codifies a great deal of virtue. Almost everyone does this. What went wrong in the process? And did God really mistakenly give Moses not only the Ten Commandments? Most people don't know that he was given hundreds of 600 plus, we could call them ways to live, and which is represented in a thing called the Torah for people who aren't familiar with the Hebrew traditions. But at any rate, I mean, if this happened, then isn't that what God really intended? That, you know, you should do this, you shouldn't do that, live this way, not that way, etc. Well, this is a point that if you recall what I said at the very beginning, that the creation and living of virtue depends upon the ability of the people or person to respond. Let's say that you're 3,000 plus years ago, more like about 32, 33, 3,400 years ago, in that ballpark. And whether you're God or whether you're Moses talking to his higher self or whatever you want to believe about that situation, because to me it doesn't really matter, and you want to come up with the highest and best system for the average of people who are basically deprived, have been deprived of any formal education for hundreds of years of enslavement, who have worked 7 days a week, or at least 6-plus days a week, depending upon what part of time you're talking about their enslavement, and who were abused, who were tortured, who had short lives. These people had a limited bandwidth of ability to create virtue, so limited that God, Moses, higher self, whatever, thought it best to codify some standards for the next several generations or more of these people so that they could not kill each other, not reject all elements of God, because they only could understand the God that had an absolute authority over them, as unfortunately Pharaoh and all of the Egyptians had over them for eons, well, hundreds of years of time to them, which is many generations. And there was no real way to bridge from that point to a point of having truly creative free thinking in at least the first couple generations of these people. So it may have been an absolute necessity to literally come to the level where they were at in terms of their consciousness and education and overall ability to create anything, to gradually move them to a higher standard or higher level. Now, I'm giving you one example, but I'm trying to show you how in that one example there are reasons that historically it might make sense to apply something that today seems absurd. It doesn't make any sense at all to tell people how to virtually live every second of their life, and if they just do everything you tell them, they're going to go to heaven and be fine. That would be ridiculous by the standards that I've taught so far. But maybe not for a group of people as I just described. I mean, maybe that is the best thing you could do for the next 2-3 generations of people, until it became possible for them to develop some significant elements of civilization themselves, have some ability ability to truly educate themselves and their children and to do some critical levels of thinking, be able to be creative at a level beyond just the most basic elements of being human. Maybe. Of course, if they put me in that position, and I could just tell you, I would have said, this is good for the next generation only. After that, you guys got to come up with your own thing. And I don't know that that wasn't said. I mean, you know, what really happened compared to what we think today could be vastly different. And traditions become established by people other than the people who start them, usually. So who knows what Moses really said. But, you know, the point is that relativistic aspects to virtue are a necessity in any long-term issues. So I would have said, well, you know, we could go by this, but then we'll gradually change some of this because eventually you've got to come to your own ideas and thoughts. And then you say, well, what about the Ten Commandments? Let's forget about those 600, whatever they are, Torah things. Let's just deal with the Ten Commandments. Couldn't those be for all time okay? Bill, there's problems. Because if life were as simplistic as 10 issues of ways of living and 10 ways of supposedly creating virtue, then, you know, would that be anything near what we have today? And even those 10 have some definite, we'll say, inflexibilities in them. And they don't deal with all of the complicated factors. I mean, thou shalt not kill. Okay, let's not kill anybody. But what happens if they come in and try to kill you, and the only way you can stop them from killing you is for you to kill them? Then what do? An interesting, complicated problem. Different religions at different times have espoused different answers to that question. Okay, so, and that's just one example. There's so many. Now, we have to look at then, what does relative virtue mean? Does that mean that everybody can say, well, hey, it's cool to go around and steal and do this because I call that virtue? Okay. No, there are some ways we can define how much form is being enlightened. And some of those ways include the following. When form is enlightened, the senses of those who experience the form or who exist within it, either one, and or, are continuously improved in their accuracy and in their ability to perceive what is happening around the person. So that's a basic way of understanding whether or not the form is being improved, because the senses of those who sense the form and the senses of those who use the form, bodies as an example, are being improved in the process. If they are not being improved, and over time this can almost always be determined. At the moment it's sometimes debatable, but over time it's not. So if they're being improved, then we can say the form is being enlightened. And if it's consistent, that's a good thing. And if it's better than it was yesterday or a week before, relative to the person's own established abilities, then we can say that that person is creating some level of virtue because they're enlightening form. You see how that works? It's really not that complicated if you put it in a very scientific and demystified way. Now, if I were to use other kinds of adjectives and things and try to describe it, it may sound like nothing and nonsense. That's the problem. And that's part of the reason that mysticism was employed in the past, is that people weren't very scientific in their thinking about it, didn't know how to explain it. And those that were listening weren't very good at thinking scientifically millennia ago. And so between those two issues, mysticism became the answer. Well, what is mysticism? Mysticism is kind of based upon a feeling rather than a thought that something is good. A sense that there is a part of God growing within the person and from the experience of what people are creating. That's what a lot of people call, in the past, have called their way of judging virtue. And that's what most descriptions of virtue still today are. But those ways are so mystical that they can be misunderstood or twisted, propagandized, changed in ways so that evil can use them and make them disgustingly destructive. So today it's much better to demystify and live within the truth of the light of God rather than the feeling of the light of God. It's not inconsistent to have a good feeling when you also can see the truth as well. That's good. That kind of goes together, and you want that. But just to have the feeling and not be able to determine the truth or even find untruth, that's not good. That's a danger. And so we don't want to go down that road because there's plenty of that in our past. And we need to get beyond that. Okay. So I hope that this is making some sense here because, again, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible, but it's still a little complicated. It's not that easy to understand these things because we're all conditioned pretty much by our younger years, which many of us have been through, where virtue was something that was absolute or more absolute than what I'm suggesting. Okay, so if virtue is really relative to the individual, and so therefore is freedom and creation with God or co-creation of God's thought and form, then that really changes all of the ideas of what I'll call collectivism and socialism, social justice, and all the communism, all of the potential philosophies and arguments against determining virtue by individual relative terms. Where does that lead if you go the opposite way? Not in a religious sense now. Now I'm talking more politically and philosophically, and even in some cases science, because many scientists have fallen into what I call the abyss of socialistic thought. The process really becomes an anti, God path. Now, what does that mean? Am I saying these people are all evil who believe that? Everybody's a socialist is evil? No, not really. What I'm saying is it moves them away from God. Just because someone is moving away from God doesn't mean they're necessarily evil by any stretch. But there's definitely a pattern of movement away from God. Even if it's in the church of divine social justice, Reverend Wright, it's a church almost like that. But even if it is like that, it's still moving away from what I have taught and still teach is an example of an expression of God. Now, obviously, if you believe God is not about individuals, there's no individual salvation, only collective salvation, there's only social justice, there's no justice outside of the justice for a large group of people, then the process that you get into from that is inevitably leading away from what I call God. And it leads towards a God that is incredibly unlike virtually any God in any religion. And it leads into a very material, very, for lack of a better word, unloving type of God. And it can also lead into a God of vengeance, a God of dictatorship, and totalitarian thought. And it almost inevitably leads to the foundations of a weakened and eventually destroyed society. This is an interesting point Because, you know, I've said in a number of different programs that although people who are into this vein aren't necessarily dark and evil, they eventually, if they were to continue long enough, will lead into that area of existence, at least into the dark side. So living a virtuous life is actually living a life that promotes individual experience of spirit and God through an individual soul. Because the proof of what I'm saying is that if there are individual souls, there could never be collectivism. Individual souls work together. They do, absolutely. But they still are individual. And so you would have to go to, like, an animal type of soul, which is a group soul, or the group soul of evil, which is probably the end of the road or journey. If you're going in a progressive way down a road of leading only to thoughts of collectivism, and in a political way, social, in economic way, socialism and communism, away from the ideas that I think most people who are listeners to this show would say have to do with God. So you can see how important this idea of living virtuously is. Because if you live virtuously, you're not going to be duped by a system that tells you that the only way to create virtue is through social justice. You see. You're not going to be duped by somebody telling you that there is no salvation for anybody. There's no way that you can spiritually advance yourself unless a certain group of people do it, be it a nation, church, whatever. That's all going to run against the grain of your soul, and you won't be tricked into this really darkness. For those of you who want to know more specifically about what I'm talking about, you may want to read Hayek's book on the road to serfdom. And I think we have a caller online. Hello, caller.
Hi, Niles. It's Wayne.
Hi, Wayne. How are you doing?
Just great, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. How's the doings out in California?
Just great, thanks. Say, Niles, apropos your discussion right now, it seems as if the discussion you had in previous programs related to the first and second ray really has some application here. In other words, it seems as if most people look at the first and second ray impulses as being those of polarity as opposed to being complementary. And you speak of the individual freedom, which is the expression of virtue, which is along the first ray, but there is also the inclusiveness aspect of the second ray. So I'm just wondering how those two can be synthesized.
Well, the synthesis is this way. Once a person chooses to create virtue, it can't just improve their senses. It has, just as a beginning point in the scientific explanation, getting through the demystification process, it can't just be for themselves that they sense better. Their senses will only improve when other people experience the same or similar effect and also learn how to do that for still others. So, by definition, you can't separate them. They are inseparable. Yet, you're right, there is some polar issues going on, because one has to do with the benefit of all, yet at the same time, the first is the benefit, I don't know if it's benefit, but we'll say the development of the individual. And this is one of the great, great mysteries, is how you can have the development of individual souls, individual beings, who at the same time are dependent upon, as they are developing themselves, they are also developing all other selves that can respond to similar levels of consciousness. And this is the very principle of what God is. It's like replicating the whole God thing right from the beginning through to ourselves and then on to others. Because God did exactly the same thing. God said, I am, yet that isn't enough. I am, and in order for I am to grow, there needs to be virtually infinite life, and that life shall be free to grow itself and be an individual as I am, while it does what I'm doing, which is give if beyond our imagination, so that other life, so that life itself can be free and continue to grow itself as it so chooses. So this is the amazing thing. What we're really doing is we are replicating the first and second rays, or thought of God, spirit, in ourselves as it becomes part of us and we embody it through our creations. And it's the great mystery revealed to only those who actually do it. To the people who aren't doing it, looking on the outside, what I just said sounds like some kind of gobbledygook kind of nonsense. But if you do it, it suddenly all comes together and you say, oh, yeah, I got it. But you really have to do it to see it happening. Otherwise, from the outside in, it doesn't seem to really, you know, it seems contradictory. And it's one of the paradoxes, it's called the pair of opposites, that exists in the higher mental world. Before you get into the depths of the higher spiritual mind, you first encounter these constant contradictions that really, really aren't contradictions. They just seem to be that way because you've got to see the biggest picture, and the biggest picture is really getting to the Creator itself, because the Creator itself did this first. And all we're doing really is finding out that great secret. Does that help? I don't know if it did.
That does help, Miles. It on the more mundane level, it almost seems like a conundrum in that, to be simplistic about it perhaps, if the conservatives are more freedom-oriented, independent, creative-focused, but yet are more rigid in their perception of rules and virtues, whereas
right.
the progressives right. tend to be, let's say, more inclusive and social-oriented, but are more relativistic, which is actually more freedom oriented. So I think it gets down to the very real questions we face of how can you balance the freedom with the idea of inclusiveness without impinging upon the freedoms of individuals.
Well, if we really talk about progressives in a majority, and especially if we talk about certain socialists going back to the 19th century, those people, and I'm the majority of progressives, along with certain socialists, fall into, unfortunately, the camp of being elitists, the people who believe egotism and arrogance replaces the call for freedom and open-mindedness. So what they say is, we can plan better, we can create better for you than you can for yourself, so we will extinguish some of your individual rights because we believe that the collective rights we as a group have decided are the ones that should be used. Not all progressives fall into that category, but unfortunately, as I've seen, way over a majority, way more than 50% do fall into that category. And that's where the problem lies. Now, on the opposite side, you mentioned conservatives. I assume you're talking about social conservatives, people who follow a doctrine of various churches and thought. And there you have the same exact thing going on the first right. Those people say, no, God told me so, the Bible tells me so, it depends on which Bible you're talking about, but their Bible tells them so, and therefore if God tells them so through the Bible, then this is the way it should be for all people. And that's what I was getting into when I was talking about Moses. And, anytime you have anything like that, be very, tread away from and be cautious, because those kinds of thoughts almost invariably are not really much different from the thoughts of people who, in a political sense, may be on the opposite end, but they're still trying to regulate the thought of others, because they believe, in this case, it's because God tells them they're right, and in the progressives, it's usually not because God tells them right, but because science tells them they're right, or because their education tells them they're right, or because their senses, as delusioned as they might be, tell them that they're right. But all those things, unfortunately...
So both sides have sort of a sixth-ray devotion to an ideal. The conservative or first-ray believing that there are certain rules and absolutes that must be followed, so with all good intention, there are unintended consequences, and likewise with the progressives, feeling that they know best for everybody to be fair and kind to everybody, they also set up rules with unintended consequences. So both sides need to lighten up on the rules.
Yeah, it's more than lightening up. I would call it opening up. As I started saying at the beginning of the show, it's open-mindedness. One of the problems we have right now, we're in the majority of people are living as the fifth sub-race of the fifth race, which emphasizes a very strong need to be right in thought and to use quote-unquote logical thinking, which they call scientific, but actually logic and science are different things. Logical thinking that proves to them that the rightness is there, and therefore their ideas should be established for all people besides themselves. That's truly what arrogance eventually is. And it starts with egotism, and it builds to arrogance. And the unfortunate problem.
Does that mean there's sort of a showdown between the sixth ray of religious devotion to the fifth ray of scientism?
No, I wouldn't put it exactly to that. I would say it's more, today we don't have much sixth ray issues any longer, because the sixth ray has been out of focus since the turn of the last century. What's really happening today is you have the seventh ray joining with the fifth ray. I'll try to explain this to you. And I hope we're not going to lose our audience here, and I'm kind of, but we'll give it a chance. Okay, here we go. And again, anyone else who wants to call in and ask some questions about what I'm saying, because Wade and I go back a ways, and we're talking about maybe things beyond what I had already started with in today's show. But here it goes. The seventh ray came in, replacing the sixth ray at the beginning for 25 years before and at the beginning of the 20th century. Once it did that, it started to organize the fifth ray. Now, when you have the seventh ray organizing the fifth ray, you have people that want to organize everything based upon quote-unquote logical thought. Once that happened, that's when socialism came in. Socialism didn't really exist before 1875, and that's the amazing thing. Now, there was Marxism, 15 years before that, which was a precursor. But in reality, that's what brought about this shift in one line of thought. Now, the other side of it was that before that time, there was, of course, many hundreds of years, in which people were very religious and very devout in their religion. And some of that had already become dominated in society. So, to some extent, you're right in that there was what we'll call a backlash or a overreaction against a lot of this emotional, sixth-ray type and religious type of foundations in society. And so people wanted to be modern, and to them, modernness reflected a quote-unquote pseudo-scientific way of organizing society based upon a small group of people's beliefs and thoughts that they can do a better job than the masses could. And so that's how it all developed. So a seven and a five come together, and you kind of get this kind of backlash against what had been hundreds of years and even longer of strong religious views being in control of how people thought. And so today it's a different thing. And I think to open up this whole issue, the best way to decide how to resolve this is to understand what today's show is about, which is how to create virtue without going through preconceived notions and, we'll say, unfortunately, wrong ways of trying to deal with other people and making it so that other people don't have freedom, don't have the ability to express themselves, and there is no love. Remember, the second ray is love, but it's love that's wise and helps other people to become loving. And we want both. You want spirit to be represented in the things that you're doing. At any rate, I hope that...
Well, that's great, Miles. I'm going to sign off, but thank you so much. You're doing just great work.
All right, talk to you later. You're welcome. Okay, Wade.
Bye-bye. See you.
All right, so we'll go ahead and take a break, and after that last few minutes of my explanation kind of throw you, when I come back, I'll take it apart and explain it more. But I needed to just sort of answer that in a way that kind of made some sense. So we'll take a break right now, and we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from now, and then we'll continue on.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about demystifying living a virtuous life. And the reason I'm using the word demystifying is that virtue has been kind of mystical up to this point and sometimes hard to understand. So I'm trying to put it in basic terms and with a few scientific things and a few metaphysical things that may be way out there, but that's okay. If you didn't understand a few things I said there, we'll get to it. Don't worry. And most of the show will be relatively easy to understand. Okay, so relativism in terms of creating virtue based upon an individual's ability to do it, to create virtue, is the critical element in understanding virtue. And without it, we get lost. We get lost in doctrines from religions to politics to science to you name it. And before long, you really don't know what virtue is anymore. And that's what I'm trying to avoid tonight, so we have just the clearest possible understanding, so that it isn't some kind of gobbledygook thing and people say, well, I listened to the guy show for 2 hours, I still don't have an idea what he said. Well, I hope not. I hope not. So let me continue on then to describe with a little more example and a little more better understanding, hopefully, what I mean by it being relative to the individual, because this is the key to the whole thing. As I was talking with Wayne about, but I'll kind of take it apart now, God, in creating the universe, according to my explanation, which could be wrong, of course, but not just mine, this is a whole, we'll say, thousands and thousands of years of thought. Some of it collectively called ageless wisdom, but it's been called a lot of different things. Nonetheless, this way of understanding God sees God as really a being that self-created. It created itself. But in the same time, in the same breath, you can also say it co-created or created everything else to be able to find God, find the God that did the creation, only as it chooses to and chooses to create more of some of the same virtues that we're talking about tonight. So the way to God is the way of a virtuous life. And a virtuous person on an individual level. There's no way that I know of to find God on a collective basis, like through social justice. Or you've heard these words thrown around, particularly the last few days. There's no way to do that because it's a road away from the thought of the creator that I'm expressing. Now, yeah, if you want to invent a God that doesn't actually have any of the qualities that I have explained, it's possible to come up with some collective idea. It's not part of any of the major religions. I guess you could create your own. Now, you see, the thing about this is that, people talk about when did collectivism really take a bad turn? And it did throughout the beginnings and towards the first third of the 20th century. And what happened? What really went wrong? Well, in a sense, if you really look at it, especially true in Germany, which poor people, Germany has been picked on so much, but it's a good example. It didn't just happen there. It happened, strangely, almost as much in England, even though the two fought each other. It's just that the German people got a leader who really pinpointed the expression of it. That's, of course, Hitler and the Nazis. And what were they really doing? Well, they still had a church. I don't know if you know this. They still had a church. But their church was, the head of their church was really Hitler. And their quote-unquote expression of God was, again, a collectivist expression that what's good for the nation and for the Nazi party is good for everyone, because they represented what God wanted. Great organization and social justice, meaning in simple terms, social justice means that until all people have some kind of equal basis in society in terms of monetary and even political abilities, etc., somehow created, usually through socialism, which is the government, there is no justice. Well, that's crazy, because then there's no individuals, and now you're dealing with people as animals. But that's pretty much the meaning of it. And what's wrong with it is that it doesn't give anyone the ability to be co-creative with their creator, and it doesn't give anybody the ability to be an individual. They can only survive and exist within a system that tells them what to do, and it discourages all incentive for growth. It's a really bad system. but it also extols the sense of power and control of the few over the many, which is dark, even evil. And so this is of great concern today, because we're facing these same issues throughout the world. There's a lot of countries that have turned to socialism, usually with a dictator or a person wanting to be a dictator, one of the two, trying to use the socialist doctrine and social justice as a means of getting power and control over the masses of people. And sometimes they're backed up by a few others who also have the same ambitions, but not quite as much a despot as the dictator would be. So you have sort of a dictator along with a group of people that act as a dictator's assistants. And this whole kind of system is an example of the contradictions in consciousness that humans are going through right now. We are growing in consciousness. We are continually growing in consciousness, and we're growing in our abilities to create virtue. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't exercise their abilities on an individual level to create the virtue that they have more capability of doing because their consciousness is great. And whenever that happens, that opens the door to darkness. So it's an odd thing that by nature, just the gradual development of a sub-race and race of humanity, which is what we're doing today, and we're focused so strongly on this idea of logic and science of sorts, and trying in a very mental way to figure out God, that unfortunately, it's such an extreme, because we're in the fifth sub-race of the fifth race. That means everything is about this fifth type of energy being the most important in our existence. Well, that's all well and good, except the problem is that if people aren't using what they got, they lose it. And rather than living a virtuous life, there's a certain level of, we'll say, desire, emotionality, because of a thing called the kama manasic connection, that's emotional-mental connection, that still leads us to want others to do the work for us while we fake it and pretend like we know better. And what we're really doing is we're trying to enslave people. And I was mentioning this guy, Hayek's book, The Road to Serfdom. That's what he's saying, that a few people, relatively, could be hundreds of thousands, but want to control the rest of the masses because they just want the power. And they really aren't the creators. They are really pseudo-creators of just the kind of system that gives them all of the ability to control everybody else, which gives them all the wealth, gives them all the everything. And in the long run, they really are people who don't seek to be high creators. They just want to create a system that allows them to be comfortable and not have to worry about anything, because they can take from others and abuse others and use them. They're enslavers. And so this is the problem we're dealing with. And so those people that claim to have all these great answers and are going to just tell you exactly what to do, and you don't have to really think anymore, those people are actually the ones who are moving further and further away from God, and who are the darkest, and over time will become very low in consciousness and even self-destruct. Inevitably, it becomes self-destructive for them, because eventually the nature of humans is to emulate their creator, which means freedom. When you destroy freedom and take freedom away from people, when you tell people they can eat this and not that, and I recently heard, like yesterday or something, people are not going to be able to eat potatoes. Children are not going to be able to eat potatoes. But it's a kind of crazy thing. Look, I'm really in for health. You know, I'm a big health nut myself. But I don't want to tell anybody what they can and can't eat. I don't want to do anything like that. That's nuts. That's the kind of thing that is the sign of a much deeper problem. And if you don't know about what I'm talking about, just go on the internet. You should find it. Okay, so I mean, when we have a society that is trying to tell people everything about what to do, that is a society that's headed for a disaster. You need freedom. You need a free marketplace. Why do you need a free marketplace? Well, because it's no different than any other expression of humanity. The ability to create goods and services and to create ways of selling them and buying them is a great part of the social system of co-creating with God. If you take away that ability to create and you say, everybody's going to do this, we're all going to line you up, you're best at doing that, you're best at doing this, this is what you can do, etc., that's a socialistic process eventually leading to communism. But if you do that, the results are that you have removed a major portion of how people co-create with God. You remove freedom. And that goes against the very nature of God and who we are. And people who are doing that to us are the tyrants. They want the control because they don't want to have to play in the fair ball game of fair markets. They want to have things their way. And then there's some people who aren't doing so well in the fair market because they've also got issues about being creative. Because they're, again, not leading up to the potential, living up to the potential. And so they go along with the system and they become people backing them. Now, let's go a little bit deeper into this. What about the people who are truly disadvantaged through some great disability, who for one reason or another, most likely karmic, but still, it's a genuine thing. They can't do that much. Should they live at the worst possible levels of existence? Maybe we should sweep them under the rug or take them out and shoot them or something. No. As a matter of fact, again, getting into what Wayne was talking about, it's just the exact opposite. Those that truly are incapable of creating virtue must be helped by those who are more capable to do the best that they can within their limitations. So am I against what people call safety or social safety nets for them? No, not at all. Just the opposite. What I'm suggesting is that each person should be given the opportunity to develop their potential to the maximum level that they are willing to do. But that doesn't mean you give handouts to people who have some kind of disability. They say, thanks for the handout and give me 10 times more, but I'm not going to do anything with it. Well, no, that's not good either. They still have to work up to the potential. You understand what I'm saying? If you look at this from an individual right and individual responsibility and individual capability level, then you solve the problem. If you try to confuse it with collectivism and socialism and communism and all the other isms, you get nowhere. You get nowhere. Really, you get nothing. Because what you end up with then is promoting more of the problems and not solving any of them. Okay, so the second ray issue, the way to help others to become more giving by helping them in whatever ways are necessary so they can be creators, is a wonderful thing. And remember that their level of creation only has to be as close as they can get it to their abilities. And that may be a very low level compared to anyone else, but as long as they're doing it at that level, that's fine. It's similar to some of the concepts in the Olympics for people who are disabled. I think that that's a great thing because it isn't about that they're going to have a world record that's going to beat somebody who doesn't have a disability, but they're going to be able to compete at the levels that they have their own ability to compete at. competition is not a bad thing. Competition is the way that people can understand if they are or are not being creative to their level of capability. It's a feedback method. It shouldn't be used as a destruction. It shouldn't be used to enslave people. And it should never be used to create monopolies. Let's talk about that. What about the idea, then, in a free market system? What if somebody gets the entire market in their area? Is that right? Well, it depends how they exercise having the entire market. It's right as long as they don't prevent others from doing the same thing. And how might they do that? Well, they might do it by preventing others from being able to be creative. As long as they allow other people to be as creative as they possibly can, and they even help to promote it, they must promote it, not just allow it, but they have to promote it, then they're fine. And then no monopoly could ever exist that way, by the way. It prevents monopolies. And you can have a government to make sure that people aren't abusing that. That's fine. There's no reason you can't have you know, a law saying that people can't make business practices that prevent others from entering into the same arena with them by making it so that there's not a level playing field of some sort. You see, this is the amazing thing, is that this system of freedom, of individuality and choice and creation is a system that makes all the sense in the world. It provides us with the natural abilities to solve the problems that we have had in society, from monopolies to dictators to military juntas to you name it. You can actually solve nearly every political, social, we'll call it physical, mental, emotional issues that people have by literally adhering to the principles of God. God has already given us the general layout. All we have to do is follow it and then be a creator within it, because that's part of the layout, and we're fine. Now, what about people who don't want to create? Let's say we end up in a situation where you got a bunch of people who are brilliant people. Oh, they got lots of smarts. They've been educated. They do all this stuff. They say, you know what? I'm lazy. I don't want to create. I want other people to do it for me, and I'll take it from them. The only thing I want to create is some way to bilk people out of money. I'm really kind of a crook, or maybe I'm a wolf in sheep's clothing. I won't let people know what I'm really trying to do, which is to take from them, which is to get the upper hand in some way and have power over them. What about those people? What should we do about those people? And the interesting thing is that if the system is kept totally open and free, if you have free markets, if you have free elections, if you have limited service in government, yes, I'm talking about term limits and other kinds of things that I've mentioned in many several shows in the past. If we have all of those things going and a lot more, and I am a believer in free thinking education, not just free education. That's one thing. That's good. But free thinking education, where people don't have to learn certain things, but are allowed to challenge and to think about anything they learn. That's the kind of system that would be very helpful. If we have all that going for us, we're safe. Because the person who chooses to not create will put themselves on the outs of society and will suffer fairly significant consequences. And unless they turn to crime outwardly, because it's already a crime in my mind against God and against everybody, therefore, for someone to selfishly say, I want to take from others, I don't want to create. But let them do that in a free system, and they will suffer immensely. They'll find no way, no refuge, in no corner of that system will they be rewarded for that kind of thought and behavior. So they'll be punishing themselves, which is okay. That's all right. we're not doing it to them necessarily. They're doing it to themselves. And so that sort of thing, to me, makes every bit of sense. You don't really have to have a lot of rules or try to control people who are doing that. Okay, what about criminals? Out now, people who say, okay, you won't let me do it clandestinely, then I'll just go rob people and I'll shoot people, etc. What do we do with people like that? I am a firm believer in incarceration for a period of time until the person can be straightened out in their consciousness, showing the ability to co-create with God. This is in chapter 5 of the book I wrote called Lights and Meaning. And so I'm a firm believer in that. And if that person then can turn it around on a gradual basis while they're incarcerated, they gain their freedom to then be creative with God and to be part of the society that they are living in, which is fine. The only other possibility to do with those kinds of people is to ostracize them, which in the past was possible because there were parts of the world you could send them to and we could forget about them. I don't know if you could do that today unless you can find an asteroid or a planet someplace to ship them off to you, and that would be practical to do so. So the ostracization of people is not really that great of an option as it used to be. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's better to face a problem head on than stick our heads in the sand and just send them off someplace. But nonetheless, the problems that we face today are solvable. We have to solve them, though, based upon the tenets of God rather than the tenets of man. And this is why, you know, I like Glenn Beck. I think Glenn Beck is on to the right track here. He's saying some things similar to, maybe not as deep. I know Glenn is, you know, he is Glenn. Glenn is Glenn. But he's saying similar stuff, and he's also putting it in ways that some people would grasp better than what I'm saying, which is fine. I mean, the point is that the ideas here are that the founders of the United States, majority of them, almost all of them, were really taking this from God. And they were already on to the very ideas that I'm expressing. Now, were they as advanced maybe as some of the things that I'm expressing in demystifying virtues? No, because they were hundreds of years ago. But for where they were and what they did, it was pretty amazing stuff. You know, that a few dozen people could come together and create the ideas that are in our Constitution and a country to follow that Constitution. It's absolutely, under the most adverse circumstances, which with the most formidable country in the world against them, because that country was threatened by that level of freedom. It didn't have it when they left England. And, you know, for most of them, majority came from England, but not all of them, of course. And over time, many others came from many other places. But the point is that this is the amazing thing about it, is that they were able to still survive in a battle against such a formidable opponent. The question is, can we survive today? Can we make this all work? Well, we'll come back to that. I want to talk about a couple other things, give your brain a little bit of a rest. I think it deserves a couple minutes of rest here. And just let you know that, you know, we're still working away on the Phi Chi Jizik. And the only thing I can tell you is that everything's ready to go, but because it takes many weeks to manufacture the herbs, it's literally manufactured to our specifications, and nobody else is using these specifications that I'm aware of. Not in any combination, anyway, maybe one or two, they might. Not in a combination like we got. 61 herbs, come on. And some of them came in and they weren't to spec, so they got shipped back. And now we have to wait for them to make them and ship them back to us, and it's clear across the country, naturally. And so we're still waiting for them. We've been told by the people that are working with us to make this stuff that as soon as they get it, they're going to put a rush on it and get it done. But it's kind of like the clock is really in New Jersey, not here. So, and it's really not just New Jersey. It's in multiple places in the United States and some other countries where these products are being made to our specifications. And it's very difficult, virtually starting over again, in making these ones that weren't up to spec. So that's what's going on there. I know some of you are kind of, you know, anxious to try this stuff. I used it today. I kind of hurt my back about a week ago doing some goofy things. And in the process, I got a chance to use this product, and it's really kept me going. I've been able to do a lot of things that I normally might have been able to only partially do or not at all, because the pain would have been too great and the back would not have healed as much. Now, I did go for today, for the first time, some massage again, but mostly I got a chiropractic adjustment. I don't do that too often, but this one was my back, one of my vertebrae was all messed up. And I knew it, because you see a big swelling there, you know, something, right? Yeah. So the 5-HT-Gesic was getting the swelling down, and it was making it better, but it wasn't putting the bone back where it was supposed to go, and the corresponding disc. So that helped. And the massages helped. I told you about I've been going to this occasionally for some massage. This particular chiropractor I go to, his name is Adam Downs. He's in Scottsdale. He did an adjustment, and I felt a lot better. And also, they do a kind of a short period of time of massage. It worked pretty good for me. So I'm just letting you know that those things are available, and if you use them, I think you'll find it very helpful. And if you need a longer or better, you know, more time massage or a bigger massage, you might call Amy Better. She's the regular massage therapist that I've been seeing. And you can reach her over at 480-292-0847 if you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area. If you're in another country, don't call her. Not unless you're willing to fly in. Okay. And in case you're wondering, we're still able to get you some Soul Balance. And recently some people have been getting it and finding it very helpful. And so you can get that from the Life Balance Association at 602-472-5127. And let me get back now to talking about demystifying living a virtuous life. Okay, your brain cool off. That kind of calmed you down. Let's get back into this. All right. Then what are we going to do if we're going to solve these problems that seem to be reaching a fever pitch? Well, I want to talk about the third ray for a second. Third ray is going to peak about 2 years from right now. And peaking means that it's slowing down, but it's reaching its highest ever zenith of maximum focus on the planet. The most amount of influence over the throat chakra of all living things that have a throat chakra in them, in any one of the bodies we're familiar with. And so this is a big deal, because the third ray is becoming more and more imbalanced in our system. And at the same time, those who are using it selfishly are getting more and more inaccurate information through it, causing them to really screw up. You can't depend upon those people at all, because whatever they say or do is likely going to be wrong for others, if not for themselves as well. This is creating a society in which goofy things are starting to happen, or have been happening for a number of years, especially since about 2007, beginning in 2007. What are some of those things? Just watch any movie, and almost the amount of violence has gone up in the last 5 or 10 years dramatically. But the third ray is very militaristic, and it tends to take things in other ray focus, such as the fourth ray, and exaggerate the third ray qualities and replace the fourth ray, because the fourth ray, it may be focused by an individual, but it isn't in focus very much on the planet itself. It's going to eventually replace the third ray, and especially after 2012, that will be true. But right now, it's getting crunched. And it also affects some parts of health. Health becomes too much indoctrinated with technology and too much influenced by the fifth ray at the cost of the art of healing, which is probably more important in terms of really getting well, which the fourth ray represents. So our healthcare system isn't working all that great. The third ray is also, in its exaggeration, leading to terrible degrees of, we'll say, power and the desire for power in those people that we were talking about earlier who want power so that they can control others and enslave others, because that's what they like doing, and besides which, they don't want to create much. They just want other people to serve them and do whatever they want them to. And that's the worst part of the third ray stimulating things right now. So if we look at what I've been talking about now during this whole show, this exaggeration of the third ray is making it uncontrollable in terms of the expansion of tyranny and people who seek power getting into power. And that's a really bad thing. After 2012, it should start to correct itself. But there could be some severe crises, including military kinds of quote-unquote incidences throughout the world. Hopefully not here in the United States, but no one knows for sure. Now, these kinds of outbursts that might occur are going to be, unfortunately, even used among those that are seeking tyranny, who are seeking to be totalitarian kinds of people, because that is their best way to get others, like the rest of us, to follow them, because once there is civil unrest, once there's insurrection, and once there is, if they can get it, revolution, then people will become fearful, some people will, and seek to, follow these crazy power-seeking people, and maybe even adopt socialism, social justice, and Marxism, whatever, without really doing their homework about what that has done to every country it's ever been in. It's a way, unfortunately, for us to learn about ageless wisdom for the more negative side of things. I read a paper, it's an article, in 1992, I think it was. It's called Two Scenarios for a Future World. And I suggested that by 2007, almost everything that has happened would happen. Everything. How did I know that? Well, I am no good at fortune telling. And now I'm not hooked into some kind of, secret whatever, and it tells me the future. No. I just knew what would happen if the third ray got out of control, because people were not creating enough virtue to offset its increasing strengthening and reaching what is known as a crisis. The crisis being those who are selfish in its use, becoming these dictatorial kinds of people. And I predicted all of the things that have occurred so far, and a few that haven't yet happened, but everybody thinks they're going to happen, so we'll see if they will. So that's, and the scary thing is, I wrote that article, 15 years before things really started going bad. That's a pretty, pretty big thing to do. But again, it's based upon science, the science of metaphysics in this case, applied to the social systems that were taking place in the world back in the early 90s. All right, so can we solve that problem? How do we solve that problem if it's so affecting us living virtuously in the world? And the best thing that I can suggest, because it affects the throat chakra, and the throat chakra has a lot to do with communication, a tremendous amount, is that we try to get truthful communication to break apart the propaganda that most often is used by those seeking tyranny. If you find people lying or saying things that aren't true, which I would call lying, let others know about it. Your responsibility, our responsibility, every individual's responsibility is to communicate with as many other people about all the lies they've become aware of in the surrounding world. If you've heard that President Obama said 20 different things contradicting his position today, let people know about that. If you heard that maybe a certain religious person, religious leader, was letting people know about something that isn't true and being slanted in a way that isn't loving or fair or open-minded, let people know about it. Let people know about all the things that you see in the world around you that are not true. The communication of truth is the best way to, we'll say, demystify and put light on those who are propagandizing and promoting lies, especially for the sake of gaining power and control. And this is the easiest and best way to undo some of the darkness that's coming from this crazy rigidness that's taking place from the third ray peeking out. Third ray's been going on for a long time. It builds civilization. It's a good thing. You know, 650, 675 years is a long time. But the point is that once it reaches this maximum level, it is unfortunately affecting the selfish people, making them become even more saturated in darkness than it is anyone else. And those people will take the opportunity to do whatever they can, to take whatever they can from the rest of us. So we all have to be on our guard about that. Remember, tell everybody. If you hear or know what you think to be the truth, then tell everybody about it. Make sure that other people around you are enough aware so that they vote in the coming election. And that they also, and this is for the people living in the United States, of course, and they also are willing to learn and understand what is happening and not be fooled by propaganda. There's a tremendous amount that is taking place right now to a very scary level, much more than people realize. We're being manipulated. But only if we choose to allow that to be the case. And that comes from, again, not using your mind to be creative and co-creative. When someone is creating virtue, they are much less capable, much less likely to be affected adversely by propaganda and lies. Because they are so much more conscious, they can see through it. They catch it. And they can also choose to do something about it, which is the great and wonderful thing. Okay, let me go on now with some of the most important elements I wanted to get to. If we're going to have a true, we'll say, measure of how to create virtue, then we need to be able to see it in ourselves and in others. When someone is creating virtue, they experience not only some joy and aspects of, we'll say, being connected to their soul and to God, but they also have a clarity in thought, in their mental mind. This clarity is the light of God in the mental body. It gives you a sense of being able to have wonderment of the universe and world around you, and an excitement about being creative in some way that others need. You don't do it because you want wealth or because you want to be recognized or have some level of importance, or, you know, be a household word in society. You do it because you know that others need what it is that you can create. And you can help others to do the same in the process of doing it. And that gives you this amazing imperviousness to darkness and evil. You feel a sense of almost like a suit of armor around you. And no matter what is done, you ultimately know that evil can only limit or destroy certain elements of form, but you are something much greater. You are a spiritual being that lives forever, and evil has a very limited period of time of its existence. So it gives you a true way to face, without fear, some of the most terrible of circumstances, be it in the world in general or the country that you're living in specifically. But it gives you a tremendous ability to forge ahead where others may run in fear. And it allows you the freedom to create even more because of that. So these senses tell us a lot about the virtue that we are creating. What if you think of being virtuous, but you're really living in a sense of dread and fear? If that's true, you're deluding yourself. And you need to, under those circumstances, be aware of the opposites applying here, that you aren't working up to your capability. Not that you haven't created some virtue, but the amount that you're creating is nowhere near the amount that you could create, or that fear and dread would go away. And you could say, well, that's, what gives you the right to say that about me? Well, I'm talking about it in general. I'm talking about it in sense of science, not in terms of moral judgment. I'm not saying this like, well, you're really a bad person. No, I'm saying it because the science of how this whole thing works strongly supports what I claim. And I'm only suggesting that you look inside yourself to find how it is that you could be much more creative than you are and choosing not to. You can say, well, isn't it circular? I'm going to be much more fearful and dreadful, but the reason I'm not doing it in the first place is because I may be fearful and dreadful. That's somewhat true, but not really completely revealing. And that's why we're demystifying this. It is true that if you don't create to your level, you may become fearful and dreading certain things. Yet, that isn't the whole reason, or not even the majority of the reason why you're not creating. You may think it is, and may use it as an excuse. But what is the real reason? The real reason is that you're not able to connect yourself to God. If you realize that you are truly a co-participant, a co-creator with God, you then don't feel as threatened by this subconscious part of us we call a personality, which is unable to really sense God. We sense God from ourself, the conscious part of us, not from our subconscious. The subconscious really doesn't get it. And so we become victims then to our misunderstanding of who we are and what we are here for. And this is the part you need to deal with in yourself. You need to say, I'm going to make conscious whatever fear I have, and I'm going to face that fear directly by recognizing that I am a co-participant and a part of a living God. And all life is precious and part of this system. And then your fear will diminish. Because once you bring it from a subconscious state to a conscious state, you say, well, you're just a bunch of playing cards, like Alice in Wonderland. When she turns to the playing cards and recognizes that who were trying to chop off her head, that they were just a bunch of playing cards. And she pushed on them and they all fell down. What does that really say? It's sort of an alliteration, right? It's saying that we all have this capability of doing this to our personality. The subconscious part of us wants us to live within our control. And this business of giving our control and power to dictators because of fears and to tyrants and to people who say they know better is all a projection of our own subconscious selves onto them. The subconscious self is really the personality. It's a projection of this personality part of us that wants to control us. And we feel, in some ways, less afraid by saying, oh, well, yeah, I'll give it to that group over there or to that dictator over there or to whatever because they know better than I do. I'll let them choose for me. Then I don't have to worry about making a mistake. Yeah. And what's really going on is you're projecting your own personality and all the fears that you have about existence, childish fears mostly, and say, well, someone else will take care of me. If you're into the collective issues, you want someone to take care of you, whether you're a welfare recipient or a member of some union that is going to make life easier for you, you think. But in reality, what you're doing is you're opting out of being creative. Because creation has the ability to fail. Creation has the ability to see yourself as having problems and mistakes that you got to grow from. This is the really deeper part of demystifying a virtuous life. It's to recognize that almost all of the things that prevent us from being virtuous at the levels we're capable of are inside us, and they're not outside. Yes, I talked about the third ray, and it's encouraging this or that. But if you look at this from the real bottom line, it's about what's in us, not with that which is without and from outside. It's what is within. And so we have the capability, we all do, to make the changes necessary to be co-creators. And we have the ability to hear all the bullcrap coming from whatever source it is that's lies from others, as long as we are co-creating with our creator near our level of ability. Once we get to that point, we're not going to be swept away by a bunch of nonsense. And that's true of all the people around you. So help others to find their consciousness and to not be afraid and to be willing to make mistakes, to be willing to be creative to the level that they're capable of or close to it, and to not seek the illusioned safety of giving this creation to others, which never really happens anyway, which we're only going to create ways of enslaving us. Nuts. And they're really never going to really create anything that creates more of God. And they're not going to create more of the things that are actually going to make anybody else feel good or be better. They're just going to take and pretend and lie to us that they're really doing it for our best interest. Because we don't know how to take care of ourselves. But they do. They do by taking most of your money and resources, but most importantly, your freedom and creativity. So these are the things that we need to be seriously examining if we're going to improve the present crisis that we're facing. Got about 2 years, guys and gals. 2 years to be able to change the system around, or we're going to be facing down a doom and gloom kind of scenario. The world's not going to end right away, but it's certainly not going to be very good. So in 2 years, we all need to be inner reflective. That's the fourth ray. That's the part that's trying to get in. That's what I've been selling you in the last 10 or 15 minutes here. You need to be more inner reflective. You need to be starting to see on a conscious level things that you haven't been willing to think about and do before. Is it okay to pray? Sure, but for others. Or if it's something about yourself, so that you can help others, so you can serve others, but not so you can receive. And do the following. On a regular basis, I prefer every day, do some reflection. How much did you create today of virtue? I mean, that's a reasonable question to ask yourself every day of the year. And there's no reason not to. Now, a lot of you might say, well, I don't want to ask myself that question. What if it turns out I didn't do much? Well, you might as well know it now. Not 2 years from now, believe me, that'll be too late. Right now, how much virtue did I create, and was that near the level that I could have done? Or could I have done more? It's sort of a self-assessment, a self-analysis. You don't need to tell anybody else about it. If you want, you can get together with others and talk about it. That's your prerogative. But I'm saying that this inner reflection is the new way. A dozen years from now or more, this is how people are really going to start living their lives. I know it's hard to believe. You're saying, and that's if we can get out of this failing spiral we're in right now. But the upside of it is, this is the way we're moving towards. The sacral center will replace the throat center as a dominant element. Yes, actually, I mean, people are going to become more inner reflective, more conscious in some ways. And, most importantly, they are going to be willing to change for the betterment of others, for spiritual reasons, and balancing the spirit and form within their life. That's not happening right now. There's a tremendous imbalance in that situation, and it's leading us to this disaster that we could be facing in a couple of years. And that's the beginning of the disaster. That's not the end of it. That's the beginning. So we don't want that to occur. I'm giving you some suggestions of how we can solve that. Now, as you tend to come up with answers each day, and I suggest you do this daily, then, and remember, I told you I was going to give you some solutions. Here's one. This is probably the biggest one I can give you. I would suggest that you write down or record in some way how the next time whatever you thought about comes up, you could be more virtuous in your creations. And be prepared to do that by seeing yourself in a contemplative way, doing it ahead of time, because it's very difficult to figure this whole thing out as it's taking place. Why is that? Because we get threatened by the pressures of time and other people interacting and a lot of other factors, and sometimes they're not fully conscious at a particular moment. And so if we don't have it somewhat planned out a little bit ahead of time, there's the propensity to deal with things subconsciously and therefore selfishly and to create much less virtue than we're capable of. That's a bad thing, because every time you do that, you cut your senses down and reduce the level that you can create virtue for the next time. And you want this to go the up path rather than the down path. So the idea here is to create a momentum that will lead us into creating a virtuous life at a higher and higher level every day. And it's entirely possible to do this. Does that mean that every day you're going to succeed at this? No. I think that would be a little hard to believe that anybody's going to do that. I would say if you can get like 8 or 9 out of 10 days going good, that's a terrific, terrific accomplishment. So don't be, we'll say, self-recriminating about your success or failures. Just be aware of your success or failures through this inner reflection on a daily basis. And make a real effort to be different the next day. You see, this is the way that I believe God chose for humans to be able to change and grow. Not animals so much, but humans. And because we can see our own creator in ourselves and in others, we already have a tremendous ability through the heart and crown chakras to develop a system as I'm suggesting here. Now, for those of you who are practicing spiritual discipline, which is a whole different kind of a more extreme level of trying to increase the virtue, there are many other things that you can be doing. I'm not going to have time tonight to talk about those. But there's been other shows where I have, and I've written lots of material about that. So you can find those sources. And this is the point, that I'm not really talking tonight about those people who are the most extreme, you know, quote-unquote spiritual initiates or whatever. I'm talking about almost everybody that is a human being living in the world today. Most of us can do what I'm suggesting. Now, yeah, there could be some extreme examples of people living in certain places where this sort of stuff may not quite fit the problems they're dealing with, and they can't. This is there's too much of a survival. Other things that they have to maybe, you know, you have certain problems in their need orientation, sort of Maslowian need hierarchy kind of problem thing. That's a little different. But I'm talking about the people who are most likely listening to the show, right? Those people probably aren't even, they don't have any way of listening to the show. They don't have a telephone. They don't have computers. They don't got nothing. And that's a different thing entirely. So for most of the people, the vast, vast, vast majority that are or could be listening to the show, this is a real solution for the problem of demystifying and living a virtuous life. Okay, finally, if a person has succeeded in making the changes I'm suggesting and using some of these methods, or whatever ones are working for them, then what is the ultimate outcome of living a virtuous life? The ultimate outcome is not only are you creating more of your creator and helping all others to do the same, your life takes on the greatest amount of meaning possible for you. As an individual, you cannot have a more meaningful life than the one that you will have by co-creating with God the most virtue up to your level of capability in every day that you exist. That is your, if you want to call it, reward. Life is the most meaningful it's ever going to be. Nothing, no how, no way, will provide better or more meaning for you than doing what I'm suggesting. So for those of you who say, well, my life sucks, it's not meaningful, I'm bored, then think about tonight's show. Try to make the changes that I suggest and see if I'm right or wrong about that question of meaning. Because I'm pretty well convinced I'm right. But again, I'm open-minded. So if I'm wrong, contact me. We'll talk about it. But here is the big payoff. The big payoff is your life becomes the most meaningful life you could possibly have at that moment, at that time, doing whatever it is that you do, the most meaningful life possible. As long as you're doing it at your level of capability. If you're a little below that, it's still going to be a lot more meaningful than almost anything else would be, but it's going to be a little less than what the maximum could be because you're not working at your full capability in terms of creating virtue. That's the bottom line. And if you don't think that's important, then I'm not going to be able to convince you of anyone's anything else. Because that's really the bottom line. Most people say, well, what else is in it for me? Am I going to get rich? Am I going to meet somebody who's really special and I'm going to have a great life and have a family? No, you're going to have the most meaningful life you possibly ever could have for you at that time, in that period of time, and during that element of existence for you in this world. Does it change when you move on to another dimension of time and space? Yes. The requirements are a little different. The kind of meaning you're going to have is a little different. But the same general principles apply. They just kind of shift around a little bit because consciousness elevates naturally. Not because you necessarily created virtue or didn't, just by the fact you move to a less dense dimension of time and space, your senses improve. Consciousness improves, your relationship with God is somewhat different, and you also weirdly lost the most greatest opportunity because the greatest place to create the most amount of virtue is in the hardest place, which is the physical world. So if you leave the physical world, you've lost that opportunity, but your consciousness increases in the next, so you have a new, we'll say, a new series, a new way of seeing and understanding how to co-create a life of virtue. So there are some things that are definitely different. I don't have any time to go into that. But I do want you to know that those things don't change the premise. They just sort of, the outcomes of things do change to some extent. And so that's something that we could deal with at another time and talk about it another time on the show. It's even more true when you go to the mental world. Beyond the next dimension of time and space, the astral, you go to the mental world, that's even more true there. But again, the same premise still applies. And so as long as you're creating virtue at the highest level that you possibly can, or as close as possible, or close as likely, or whatever way we want to put it, then you're going to have an extremely meaningful life. And you're going to do great things for yourself and others. If this show tonight has touched a chord in you, I will get a few seconds to say this, then tell others about it. Share the ideas in tonight's show. I know there's been a huge number of them. So listen to the show a few times. Take some notes, whatever it's going to take. And share it with others. Because there's so many people out there who are looking for the answers that are in tonight's show. I hope they will help you, and then you try to help others by sharing them with them. Explain what you know about it, tell them what you're doing, and let them know about the show, and then they can go listen to it too. But maybe they want to hear a few ideas from it before they do that, because people only have so much time and energy, and they might be a little shy to try it. So you convince them a little bit, and then they'll get more involved in it. Well, anyway, we're out of time for right now, and I hope this has made a difference. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.